realistic on what they're asking for. And unfortunately, it feels like we've had a lot of these labor strike situations that have occurred in the last few years as we've been covering things in northern Minnesota as a news team here.
One final story that we want to highlight is you've been talking about the fall color outlook.
Yes, my favorite time of year is when the fall color finder is put up on the screen. So the DNR had a news release or a news conference this week, and they released their fall color finder, which is such a fun little map to keep your eye on where it's best to go and see the fall colors. Good news, they said that the fall colors are supposed to be really great this year. The conditions that have happened with the weather and the temperature and the rainfall have all led to, they believe, some of the best possible conditions that you can ask for, especially these cooler temperatures we've been having in September as well, really encourage that early fall color. I know that you guys have already seen it up there because when I was up there this weekend for Riverfest and driving down Highway 2, I was like, oh, you can definitely see whispers of it pretty heavy already.
Yeah,
So,
well, there are
yeah.
some trees that are just like, oh, you're all the way there, all the way there. Yeah, we'd love to get photos from folks if you want to send in your fall photos. It is usually stunning to see. That's one thing. Sometimes when the moon is out and you want to get a photo of something, it just doesn't stand up, in a photo. But fall colors do. They are some of the
Yes, they
best
do.
photos out there. We'd love to get them from you. You can text them to 218-326-1234. Chelsea, thanks for your good work and keeping the KEXE newsroom going.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day and enjoy the fall colors and the fog.
All right. Thanks, Chelsea. Coming up in this next hour, we're highlighting some more area events in northern Minnesota.
Support for KEXE comes from Paul Bunyan Communications, offering technology for businesses, including cloud solutions, cybersecurity services, network management, and more, all with local customer service and support. Paul Bunyan Communications, Northern Minnesota's local broadband cooperative.
And we'd like to thank Lady Sippers NA Bottle Shop in downtown Deer River, Itasca County's only NA bottle shop, offering ready-to-drink options, ingredients for craft cocktails, gifts, and more. Info available at Lady Sippers.
You are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley, Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio. We are people-powered radio in northern Minnesota, operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. You can find us at KAXE.org or ask your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Thank you.
We just heard from someone who works at the University of Minnesota saying that was the best, most thorough and fair reporting on the strike I have heard. Thank you. Please pass along my thanks. Good to hear from you this morning. You can always let us know what you think of our programming, events going on, news that you are aware of. You can text 218-326-1234 or email your tips to news@kaxe.org.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. A vigil was held last night in Orem, Utah for conservative media personality Charlie Kirk, who was gunned down yesterday while speaking at a university in Utah. He was 31 years old. This as a manhunt continues for the gunman. Among those gathered, Margie Nielsen, who says Kirk died for his beliefs.
I've been to countless Turning Point events, ran the Turning Point chapter at my high school. I don't believe anyone should be persecuted for their beliefs. Everyone is entitled to their own opinions, no matter what they are.
And as NPR's Elena Moore reports, Kirk spent more than a decade in GOP politics and became one of the most influential voices in young conservatism.
Charlie Kirk co-founded Turning Point USA when he was just 18, with a goal of building an organization for young conservatives. He became a face of the young MAGA movement, and his group's advocacy wing worked with the Trump campaign to mobilize new voters. Speaking to NPR the day after the election, Kirk reflected on Trump's gains with young Americans.
They want a nice life, and they feel it slipping away. They feel as if insanity is creeping into their institutions, and It's more, dare I say, a vibe than anything else.
Trump was the first to announce Kirk's death, writing in a post that, quote, no one understood or had the heart of the youth in the United States of America better than Charlie. Elena Moore, NPR News.
Another school shooting, this time in Colorado. Police say two students are dead, three are hospitalized after another opened fire at Evergreen High School, about 30 miles from Denver, yesterday. Authorities say the shooter, who was armed with a revolver handgun, took his own life. Colorado's governor says he's devastated by the shooting, calling it a senseless act of violence. There's no word on a motive. The Venezuelan boat, destroyed by the U.S. military last week, appeared to be heading back to port. NPR's Quill Lawrence reports the White House claims they were drug traffickers.
A U.S. official who was not authorized to speak publicly told NPR that the speedboat appeared to have turned around and was heading back toward land, possibly because of the presence of U.S. military aircraft. The White House claims, so far without making evidence public, that the 11 people killed on the ship were members of a Venezuelan gang, Tren de Aragua, smuggling drugs bound for the U.S. Human rights groups and former military lawyers have called the strike murder. Experts on narco-trafficking say that very little fentanyl or even cocaine transits Venezuela en route to the United States. Quill Lawrence, NPR News.
Investors on Wall Street are awaiting a closely watched consumer price index reading due out this morning. Economists are expecting the CPI to show monthly increases of around 0.3%. This after the latest producer price index reading showed wholesale prices fell 0.1% last month. U.S. futures contracts are trading higher. You're listening to NPR News from Washington. Today marks 24 years since the September 11th, 2001 attacks on the United States, with solemn ceremonies, volunteer work, and other tributes honoring the victims. At the World Trade Center site in New York City, the nearly 3,000 victims' names will be read aloud. At the Pentagon in Virginia, a memorial service will honor the 184 service members and civilians who were killed. As fall draws near, many people are thinking about vaccinations for flu season and for COVID-19. But as NPR's Sydney Lupkin reports, COVID shots may be harder to get this year.
The Food and Drug Administration's approvals for this year's COVID boosters are narrower, but drug companies say they're still making similar volumes of the jabs as last year. Claire Hannon is the executive director of the Association of Immunization Managers. She says pharmacies are able to order the shots and they've been shipped out.
I think it's going to be harder to access, but I think anybody that wants it, you know, we'll be able to get it, but they're just going to have to work hard to find it.
She says patients can use vaccine finders, which Pfizer and Moderna both have up and running, to find pharmacies with COVID shots in their area. Sydney Lupkin, NPR News.
Novo Nordisk, maker of weight loss drug Wegovy, is reducing its staff. The Danish pharmaceutical company says it will cut 9,000 jobs. That could save the company around $1.2 billion by the end of the year, money they say they could funnel into research and development on new diabetes and weight loss drugs. I'm Janine Herbst, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include The Economist. In a world of rapid change, The Economist seeks to cut through the noise to offer insight into what matters now and what's coming next. Daily global reporting, podcasts, videos, and more at economist.com.
808, this is the Thursday morning show. It's KEXE, KBXE. We are people-powered radio in northern Minnesota. Up next, we're headed to the Brainerd Lakes area to find out about an event going on, Cultivating Communities event, that is next week. It looks like we do, the dense fog advisory is gone, so that's good news. There's okay. Still a little bit of fog out there, though. Partly sunny, high 72 to 75, southeast winds 5 to 15, and mostly cloudy overnight tonight, 50 to 60 degrees. And Friday looks like partly sunny with temperatures in the mid to upper 70s. I've gone back to cracking my window open at night. How about you?
Yeah, I made sure that I was able to do that last night. I had, you know, kind of closed things up a bit when it was so cold.
Oh, okay.
And then
okay.
I was like, nope, I got to make sure my window's unlocked so that it opens so that I can just, you know, in the night if I want to just, you know,
yeah,
push it up and not have to deal with some of the intricacies of the windows.
Yeah, that hopefully will wake you up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Support for KAXE comes from Hot Tubs of Northern Minnesota on Middle School Avenue in Bemidji, offering hot tubs, pool tables, saunas, and more. Learn more online at hottubsmn.com.
Blew into Austin from Denver yesterday. Got word my manager didn't wanna stay. Ain't that right? Ain't that right? Ain't that right? Ain't that right? You'd think I would be a little more confused, but I play a dangerous game where people get abused. Ain't that right? Ain't that right? Ain't that right? Ain't that right? We were up above it all, flying in your plane. Half the time I had a Bloody Mary, Lord, I wasn't feeling anything. There you was in all that leather, with something on your mind. I found out just what it was in the Salt Lake City lights. Ain't that right? Ain't that right? Ain't that right? Ain't that right?
That's Charlie Crockett. Ain't that right? It's off his latest album, Lone Star Rider, that came out. And the name of the song, wasn't sure if that was just part of the song or the name of the song. You never know. It is Ain't That Right by Charlie Crockett. This is the Thursday morning show. Coming up, we're going to be hearing more from National Public Radio, where we focus on the killing of right-wing activist Charlie Kirk. National Public Radio is covering that news story.
I'm Jennifer Barr with Heidi Holton, and thanks so much for tuning in this morning. We have been talking about events going on in our region, whether it's classic movies in Big Fork or other community events. Up next, we're learning about the Sewing Room and their summit coming up. Don Espy, Executive Director, joins us now. Good morning, Don.
Good morning to both of you. Thank you for having me here today.
Yeah.
Well, should we start with if people don't know what the Sewing Room is, and it's S-O-W.
Right, yeah. So it's kind of a play on words. The Sewing Room started about a year ago now, a little over a year. It's a nonprofit organization that really focuses on creating places and spaces for folks in rural communities, particularly folks that maybe don't always see themselves in the perceived norms of rural places as well. And so it's really about creating those inclusive spaces.
So next week you have a big event. It's called Cultivating Communities. Tell us a little
bit more.
Actually,
the week after, the 22nd and 23rd, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
We're getting there, though. We're really getting there. Yeah, so September 22nd and 23rd, it's a Monday and Tuesday. This is the second time that a Cultivating Communities Summit has been hosted. The first one was in 2022. And it was right after we were coming out of the pandemic, and coming together as a community felt really great. And we're kind of in those times of polarization again, where it might be a really great time to come out and be in community again with each other. And so the Cultivating Community Summit is a two-day event. It's at the Gitchazibi Center for the Arts in downtown Brainerd. We have a variety of keynote speakers, interactive plenaries, breakout sessions. We also have musicians playing music in between all of the different breakout sessions and things, so you're kind of getting entertained at the same time. We have local artist Lisa Ackerman, who will be there working with the attendees on a community art project that she'll be putting out after the summit. There's a downtown lunch, so the attendees will get to go into downtown Brainerd and pick from one of the many restaurants to eat at for lunch that day. So a lot of things happening with the summit. There are still, registration ends tomorrow, You know, so we do still have some time for folks to get registered if they want to get registered. Adrian Benjamin, who is an Anishinaabe artist and activist from Relax Lake, will be our introduction keynote speaker. She is an amazing presenter. I've heard her speak a few times now, and she's really great. And then we also, closing out the summit on Tuesday, we have Danger Boat Productions, which is an improv troupe out of the metro, and they do a really great job of capturing what they've heard at the summit and then putting it into little bite-sized skits at the end of the day. So yeah, a lot going on with this.
Is this focused on rural areas in general, or is it focused on Brainerd? Can people from outside of the region?
No, it's meant for rural folks, right? The Sewing Room really focuses on rural places and trying to bring resources and events and opportunities that are meant for rural folks, right? And so there are four buckets that are kind of being concentrated on at the summit. The first one is social cohesion, just that general, how do we get along with each other? And then there's equity and education, there's environmental justice, and then there's an inclusive workforce and economic development breakout sessions as well. So there's kind of something for everybody within it is what I was trying to do. Then all of the breakout or the keynotes and the large group things are meant for more of a general overview. So yeah, Sarah Sherman from, oh my gosh, Sarah Sherman from Dandelion Farms. She is a neurodivergent family specialist who is an amazing, amazing presenter. So I'm really excited to hear from her at lunch on Monday. Oh my gosh, there's so much.
You know, it takes so much work to kind of create something like this for people. You said the first one happened kind of when it was needed. Were there surprises that came out of it? Because, I mean, you can't, you've said who's going to be there, but you can't predict, like, who's going to connect or what's going to come
right
out of it.
Yeah, no. Some surprises that came out of it, I think, were the, you know, when you host an event like this, you never know. You never know if it's going to speak to folks, right? And I think the surprising thing for me, and what I hoped the outcome would be, was just how many folks it did speak to. And we had about 250 people at the first event, and it was folks from, you know, the USDA to the EDA to a nonprofit organization, you know, to the Relationship Safety Alliance here in Brainerd, you know, just the variety of folks that were interested in being there. And I think my biggest moment was when the summit was ending in 2022. And I don't know if you know Sharon and Shirley Nordrum, they're twins. Shirley passed away a couple of years ago now, but those two were at the entire summit. And when they left, they said, this was the best summit we have ever been to in our lives. And I thought, if the Nordrum sisters are saying that to me, I know I've hit the mark with this summit. Yeah.
So if people want to register, you said the deadline is tomorrow. How do people find more information?
They can actually go to the website. So www.sewingroom.org. And again, it's an O for the sewing the seeds. And then /CC summit. And they can get to it. If folks aren't able, because I know it's during the day, some folks work, they might not be able to, but if they still want to be participating in the summit in some way, Monday evening in Brainerd, I have two events happening for the general public that are free. The first one is from 4:30 to 6 at the Mississippi River Amphitheater Park. And we will be having Fire in the Village there. So Annie Humphrey and Shanae Mattson will be there. We will also be having Wonder Trek Children's Museum. We'll have some interactive activities there for kids. We'll have some food. We'll have a few other opportunities for folks to interact with different community groups. So that's from 4:30 to 6. And then at 6:30, back at the Gitchazibi Center for the Arts, we're going to be hosting a screening of the film Join or Die, which is about the importance of us joining community groups and getting together as communities and how that really helps with the fabric of our communities. And then at the end of the film, we're going to be zooming in the director of the film for a bit of a Q&A. And those are free. Both of those events are totally free.
Don Espey's executive director at the Sewing Room in Brainerd. You can learn more at sewing, S-O-W-I-N-G, sewingroom.org. Don, thanks for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate you too. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Coming up before 9 o'clock, we're learning about more events. This time we'll be learning about opera, a theater event going on in Popovsky. It is, what is it called? Truck?
There's a pickup truck opera, and
there we go.
It's through Mixed Precipitation Theater Group.
Okay. I couldn't remember if it was truck or tractor opera, but there we go. That's coming up, and then at 9 o'clock, it's DJ Dang for Headwaters.
Support for KAXE comes from Bemidji Brewing, celebrating 10 years of their German Blonde with a week-long anniversary event September 30th through October 4th. Includes beer infusions, events, pop-up shops, and live music. Find full details on their Facebook page, Bemidji Beer. Nice catch.
Current conditions around the region, we're seeing 51 degrees in Hibbing, 57 in Brainerd, Grand Rapids at 53, Bemidji reporting 56, and Aiken reporting 53 degrees right now.
Support comes from Clackau Brewing Company in Grand Rapids, making traditional old world styles of beer as well as modern classics for 7 years now. Their tap room is open Monday through Saturday, noon to 8, Sunday, noon to 6. More info at clackaubrewing.com. And we thank the Blandon Foundation, strengthening rural Minnesota. More at blandonfoundation.org.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Michelle Martin. The killing of conservative activist Charlie Kirk yesterday at a college in Utah is just the latest in a series of politically motivated violent acts just in recent months. They've spawned the political spectrum. The killing of a Democratic state lawmaker and her spouse in Minnesota, and the shooting of another and his spouse, the Democratic Pennsylvania governor's residence firebombed while he and his family slept, two Israeli embassy staffers murdered after an event at a Jewish museum in Washington, D.C., Tesla charging station set on fire, shootings at a campaign office for Democrat Kamala Harris in Arizona, and, needless to say, two assassination attempts of President Trump during the 2024 campaign. And as we said, that's just some of the incidents that we know about in just the past 14 months. We wanted to hear from NPR senior political editor and correspondent Domenico Montanaro about what he makes of this political moment. And he's with us now. Good morning, Domenico.
Hey, good morning, Michelle.
So what's happening here?
You know, I mean, we're in a tremendous time of political volatility. You know, we should say we don't know the motivation behind this killing yet, but Kirk was someone who was provocative and eager to have all of the political debates. He was a key and prominent figure in Trump world and in helping get a lot of younger voters, especially younger men, to become Trump voters. And any politician or public person who puts themselves out there right now will tell you that they've faced increased threats over the last several years.
So we're seeing that people in the public eye are saying that they're seeing increasing threats. But what about, let's just, for the sake of argument, use the term average American. How are they viewing this and the viewing of the country's division?
Yeah, I mean, from conversations I've had and our reporters have had during the last few campaigns in the Trump years, you know, people see their ways of life under threat. You know, conservatives chafed under what they saw as a liberal lurch under President Obama, and they saw the culture, the media, whether it's the news, TV, movies, what have you, as too liberal, weak, and enabling. And they feel too many talk down the good qualities of the country. Meanwhile, for those left of center, it's very different. I mean, they see threats to the marginalized, women, immigrants, minorities, because of leaders who they see as having given license to meanness, intolerance, conspiracy. And they see democracy itself as under threat with Trump's strongman tendencies. So very strong feelings, but in very different directions. And there's a lot of hopelessness people feel for different reasons about this political time. And that can lead to violence, even if it's a small few who might go that far.
Do we have some polling that speaks to that? What does it say?
It's interesting because you see this kind of dichotomy that emerges. You know, Georgetown University poll found that overwhelming numbers of people say they want civility and compromise and believe respect for each other is the first step in having a government that works. More than 8 in 10 felt that way on those things. But they also are very dug in the same polling on what they believe. You know, more than 8 in 10 said that they're tired of leaders compromising their values and ideals. What's more, 72% said that those personal values are under attack. When it comes to violence, 3/4 of people in our NPR PBS News Marist poll from earlier this year said that political violence is a, quote, major problem. On acceptance of it, a University of Chicago survey that I looked at just before last year's election found 6% supported the use of force to restore Trump to the presidency. 8% supported it to prevent Trump from getting back to the White House. Small numbers, but it does represent millions of people. And when you have that kind of environment, mistrust of the system and institutions, all of it, unfortunately, takes is a few radicalized people, as we've seen in either direction.
Briefly, and we really need to talk more about this, but what is there a way out of this?
You know, experts say there really needs to be a unified message from political leaders and influencers on social media to call for calm and stop dehumanizing each other. But too often, we've just seen the opposite.
That's NPR's Domenico Montanaro. Domenico, thanks.
You're welcome.
People influenced by Charlie Kirk include our next guest, Joe Mitchell, who is a former Iowa State representative and founder of Run Gen Z, a group with a goal of electing young conservatives. Mr. Mitchell, I know you've described Charlie Kirk as a kind of mentor, so I should begin by saying I'm sorry for your loss.
Thanks, Steve. I think it's an overestimate to say how sad of a day it was yesterday in America.
Yeah.
How terrible of a day it was, and tragic, and you know, we never have a day like it ever again.
What role did Charlie Kirk play in moving you into activism?
Well, Charlie was a friend and he was a mentor, and Charlie was a God-fearing man, and he was a father and a husband and a patriot and a friend to many. Charlie inspired me to start a group called Run Gen Z, where we help young conservatives run for state and local office. And Charlie gave me seed money for that organization, was a partner in that, and played a tremendous part in my life and had a huge impact on my life over the last 6 years. Yesterday, to date, was the first time I met Charlie Kirk in Des Moines, Iowa on September 10th, 2019. So it was a particularly rough day.
Thank you for sharing that. I'm interested in founding this organization. Did he come to you and say this is a thing you should do, or did you go to him and say this is my ambition, and he helped?
Well, when I met Charlie, I was the youngest state legislator in the state of Iowa on that day 6 years ago, yesterday, and I told him, I said I wanted to start an organization to help young conservatives run for office like I did, and he immediately understood what I meant and brought me to Turning Point Events to speak, and eventually gave me the money and really the political will and the people behind me to start the organization. And so again, can't overstate how huge of a impact Charlie had not only in my personal life but also, professionally with Gen Z.
I'm thinking his public persona, Charlie Kirk's public persona, is very well known at this point. He was in public so much. He was in front of people or on camera so much. He made a lot of polarizing remarks about people who were different from him or had different views from him, but he also stood in front of people who disagreed with him and engaged with them and took their questions and criticisms and responded. I'm just curious, having known him over a number of years, do you think that he learned or evolved in any way from his interactions with so many different kinds of people?
Steve, what remarks? What are you guys talking about? Because here's what happened, Steve, is that he was called a Nazi and Hitler and a fascist for so many years, and that's what led to the shooting yesterday. And it's despicable what the news media is doing right now, is saying that he was so decisive, he said these things. Charlie was the most kindest person in the entire world that I knew. He believed in civic debate more than anybody else that I knew. And so the rhetoric that's been spewed out in the last 24 hours is what led to the shooting yesterday and the execution and the assassination of Charlie Kirk. And it makes me just sick to my stomach what's happened. And so people need to get a hold of the rhetoric. They need to understand that what they say has implications, and that's what happened yesterday.
Okay, well, we're going to have to leave it there. We'll continue the discussion another time, I hope. Joe Mitchell is the founder of Run Gen Z and is a Republican candidate, is a Republican candidate for Congress in Iowa. Thanks so much. This is NPR News.
Coming up, local news, it will be the Up North Report. I'm Heidi Holton with Jennifer Barr. Tomorrow on the Friday morning show, we'll bring you sports. The Lynx play again tonight. I think it's their final game before we get into playoff season. They played a really not great game on Tuesday night this week. And I am so curious to know if that's just a normal thing because they know they're in the playoffs. Mm. You know, they weren't playing all the starters, but their bench is really good too. So it was really disappointing. It was a tough game to watch.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll be talking sports tomorrow on the sports page, and you can always weigh in by texting us at 218-326-1234.
Support comes from North Homes Children and Family Services, providing compassionate mental health services to children and families at home, school, and in the community. More information at northhomes.org.
Partly sunny today, high 72 to 75, southeast winds 5 to 15, and mostly cloudy overnight, lows 50 to 60 all across our region.
Walker Ethnic Fest is happening in downtown Walker this Saturday with food and art from 10 to 5. There is a parade at 11 and live music going from noon until 9.
Manuman Arts Initiative has their art mini summit on Saturday. Local artists invited to artist presentations, open studios, and vendors. Only 75 guests can attend this, so you have to sign up through their Instagram page. Manuman Arts Initiative is a Minnesota-based organization operating out of Manuman, Minnesota.
For KAXE News, I'm Chelsea Perkins with the Up North Report. Authorities have identified the 35-year-old woman who died in a three-vehicle crash on Friday in Virginia. Virginia police say the victim was Tara M. Schumacher of Eveleth. Eyewitnesses told police that Schumacher swerved into oncoming traffic and struck two different vehicles. She was unconscious and not breathing when responders pulled her from the vehicle. The two other drivers suffered non-life-threatening injuries. Police say they believed Schumacher was under the influence of an intoxicating substance at the time of the crash. It remains under investigation. Two big questions are looming without definitive answers from Governor Tim Walz: whether he will officially call a special session to address gun control measures, and whether he'll seek a third term as the state's top leader. In two separate stories, the Minnesota Reformer reports the likely answer appears to be yes in both cases. Two people who were in a group of 100 or so Democratic donors on Tuesday told the Reformer that Walz made it clear to them he intends to run again. Walz has also told several people privately but definitively that he will run again, and he will make a campaign announcement next week, according to the Reformer's sources. A Walz spokesman declined to comment. A DFL source who was at the event said Walz was thrown off by the June killing of Representative Melissa Hortman, who was a friend and governing partner. But the recent mass shooting at Annunciation Catholic Church in Minneapolis, quote, lit a fire in him. The possible special session also comes in the wake of the shooting. After meeting with legislative leaders behind closed doors on Tuesday, Walz told reporters he would, quote, call a special session one way or another. Walz says he will propose a gun control package in the coming days. It will include a ban on the heavy weaponry frequently used in mass shootings and often referred to as assault weapons. The Republican caucus released a school safety agenda last week that didn't include any proposals on gun control. They're calling for increased funding for school safety at private schools, boosting funding for more mental health treatment beds, and increasing penalties for repeat firearm offenders. Their agenda also includes reversing a conversion therapy ban for minors, which would allow therapists to try to change a person's sexual orientation or gender. The West Fraser Wood Engineering Plant west of Bemidji is one of three companies to receive a portion of $4.2 million in business expansion grants from the state. The company plans to renovate an existing building and improve the operating site in the small community of Solway. The operation there produces engineered wood products such as OSB or particle board that are used widely in construction and other industries. The project will receive more than $1 million in financing from the state's Job Creation Fund, with the company expected to invest $137 million. The project is expected to retain 132 jobs, according to the Department of Employment and Economic Development. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources is predicting great fall color this year as they roll out their annual Fall Color Finder. Fall color typically peaks from late September through mid-October, starting in the northwest portion of the state and working toward the southeast corner. Brian Schwingel is a forest health program consultant with the DNR. He says the right mix of temperatures and moisture that occurred this year means there's a good likelihood of vibrant colors. A drier May means less leaf disease that can lead to defoliation, and the overall lack of drought this summer means less stress on the trees.
The cooler September thus far also promotes prettier fall colors and will likely lead to earlier color.
When you get those cool temperatures that don't quite get down to freezing, you get more of those red pigments produced in the leaves.
Peak color usually lasts about 1 week once it arrives, but can vary widely depending on location and weather. In fact, Schwingel had this to say about the variation.
I honestly think that predicting fall colors is more complicated than rocket science. I'm not kidding. There are so many variables that have been studied and continue to be studied.
Both Itasca and Lake Bemidji State Parks are among those offering fall color-themed events. Learn about how animals survive the changing seasons this Saturday at Lake Bemidji on a half-mile walk along the Bogwalk Trail. And the Lookin' at Leaves hike around the Dr. Roberts Trail in Itasca is 2 miles and takes place 10:30 to noon on September 20th. That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Chelsea Perkins, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is sponsored by Woodland Bank, with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River, dedicated to serving the financial needs of the community and their customers. More info at woodland.bank.
You can sign up for an Up North Report podcast, find the links and more at kaxe.org, and read more information and more news reports there as well.
It is the Thursday morning show on KAXE. I'm Jennifer Barr with Heidi Holton, and support comes from Itasca County Health and Human Services, hosting the 17th Annual Community Connect Thursday, September 18th from 11 to 3 at Yanmar Arena in Grand Rapids, featuring over 50 social service agencies providing info on housing, energy, county assistance, and more. All are welcome.
Coming up, we'll be headed to Popaski. We're going to be talking about an opera that is in Popaski, and that is Saturday, this Saturday at 3 o'clock. We've been talking local events. Don't forget, we need to know more about them. We can't be everywhere all the time. And so we need, whether it's your news tips or event information, you can either text us or email, text 218-326-1234. Up first, though, we've got more from Morning Edition.
Okay, we heard about Charlie Kirk as an ally of the president. He was an activist who drew both loyal followers and fierce critics through confrontational public events, similar to the one he was hosting when he was killed.
He became an important supporter of President Trump. In a video message, the president praised him Wednesday night.
Charlie was a patriot who devoted his life to the cause of open debate and the country that he loved so much, the United States of America.
Through his group Turning Point USA, Kirk amassed a large online following among young people. He turned that following into action that helped Trump's successful 2024 presidential campaign.
NPR's Stephen Fowler covers the Republican Party, and he's next. Stephen, how did Kirk fit into the political ecosystem?
It is impossible to overstate the importance of Kirk to an entire generation of young conservatives and to Republican politicians that benefited from those young conservatives showing up to vote. You could call him many things, an influencer, grassroots organizer, business executive, author, radio show host, an all-around avatar for politically active online and offline Gen Z Americans. When he was 18, just months before President Obama was reelected, he co-founded the group Turning Point USA as this sort of college campus free speech nonprofit. Here's how he described it last year.
I had the crazy and wild idea as I was driving home from Rockford, Illinois. There's a lot of things went into this, and I said, that's it. I want to try to start a youth organization to try and save Western civilization.
In the years since, it's grown to be an integral part of the Republican Party, with annual summits, expanded outreach to faith leaders, voter registration initiatives, and a big seat at the table when it comes to shaping discussion about policy and its impact on young people.
And then what brought him to the campus in Utah?
This was the first stop of 15 planned American Comeback Tour events at college campuses around the country. And one of the signature things he did were these big outdoor debates where Charlie Kirk would actually face off against people who were ideologically and in some cases morally opposed to his views that were sometimes provocative and inflammatory, and he would make content out of these dialogues. Kirk and Turning Point were the smash-mouth front line of the Republican Party's culture war, and at times he did weather controversy. He courted far-right figures on his podcast and made comments denigrating transgender people, vaccines, the 2020 election, and so much more. He also delivered a made-for-social-media rebuke of President Biden's economic vision at last year's Republican National Convention.
The basic things our parents enjoyed are increasingly out of reach for Gen Z and millennials. You see, the American dream has become a luxury item for the wealthy elite.
He was close with President Trump and actually remained one of the president's advisors and figures who stayed by his side when Trump was out of power.
Well, what has the president said? We've already heard a little bit, but let's listen here. What did the president say about the news of Kirk's death?
He announced it on social media and ordered flags to be flown at half staff, something typically utilized for figures of national importance. Here's some more of that video message.
It's long past time for all Americans and the media to confront the fact that violence and murder are the tragic consequence of demonizing those with whom you disagree day after day, year after year, in the most hateful and despicable way possible.
The president did went on to blame radical left political violence, though we don't know anything about the shooter or motive.
NPR Stephen Fowler, thanks so much. Officials in Poland and with NATO say they're awaiting results of a military assessment before deciding on a response to more than a dozen Russian drones that flew into Polish airspace early Wednesday.
Some of the drones were shot down, and it was the first time in the history of NATO that alliance fighter jets engaged enemy targets in Allied airspace.
NPR Berlin correspondent Rob Schmitz is on the line. Hi there, Rob.
Hey, Steve.
What are you hearing?
So Polish authorities say this morning that they found the wreckage of at least 9 drones. They were all Shahed-style attack drones that Russia uses in its attacks on Ukrainian cities. A spokesperson for the prosecutor's office in Lublin, a city near Ukraine, says that all of the drones found so far were unarmed, so-called dummy drones, which are used by Russia to fool Ukrainian air defenses.
Okay, so let's think this through now. We're talking about a NATO ally that was attacked. Poland's right. government invoked Article 4 of the NATO treaty, not the most famous one. This calls on all member states to hold an emergency meeting if one of them is threatened. This is not the more famous Article 5, which calls on a member state response right. as if they're all attacked. But this still represents an escalation. How is NATO responding? What does it mean to hold a meeting?
Yeah, so NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte, after the meeting, came out and spoke to reporters yesterday, and he said that NATO's response was swift, it was decisive, NATO fighter jets were quickly scrambled. Rutte said the response was exactly what NATO forces spend much of their time preparing for. He said this incident should remind European member states to invest more in their militaries, and he also had this message for Russian President Vladimir Putin.
To Putin, I mean, my message is clear. Stop the war in Ukraine. Stop the escalating war, which he is now basically mounting on innocent civilians and civilian infrastructure. Stop violating Allied airspace and know that we stand ready, that we are vigilant, and that we will defend every inch of NATO territory.
Okay, he says, to Putin, this is my message. Has Putin responded?
Not directly. And Russia's response here has been a little confusing. Early on, a general from Russian ally Belarus, where Russian and Belarusian forces have been holding military exercises recently, called this whole episode an accident. And he said it was caused by errant drones that had encountered electronic interference. Later on, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov refused to comment on the drones, but he used the opportunity to accuse European leaders of leveling accusations against Russia on what he called a daily basis. And then Russia's defense ministry finally weighed in, saying it had not planned to hit any targets in Poland and suggested that Poland was out of range of its drones, which is not true.
Well, if the drones got there and got shot down, clearly not true. So a variety of explanations or at least statements. How are people taking all of this in Poland?
Yeah, I think the situation is pretty tense. You know, there's a lot of history between Poland and Russia and a fair amount of bad blood that continues to this day. In recent years, Russia has launched a variety of hybrid attacks on Poland, including weaponizing migrants and busing them to the Belarus-Polish border. Poland has spent billions on building a new fence, on putting up military barriers. It even pulled itself out of an international treaty that bans landmines. Poland is now spending nearly 5% of its GDP on its military. No other NATO member spends that much on its GDP on defense. So it's clear Poland is preparing to defend itself.
NPR's Rob Schmitz, thanks so much.
Thank you.
This is NPR News.
Morning Edition here on People Powered KAXE. We'll continue our conversations about what's going on in our region. That's coming up next. We're learning about an opera in Popovsky. Weather for the day today, it is looking a little foggy, and then sun will come out. High 72 to 75. Southeast winds 5 to 15. Cloudy tonight with lows 50 to 60, and a slight chance of showers in the morning tomorrow. Partly sunny with temperatures in the mid to upper 70s, and Saturday's looking partly sunny, highs in the upper 70s to low 80s. We haven't even talked yet about our question of the week. We're looking for favorite TV shows as we head into fall. I particularly want some new things to kind of, once it really gets cold, to start binge watching or something. So
yeah, those shows that, especially the ones you're kind of into right now, we would love to hear about those. Text us to 1-8-326-1234. Coming up at 9 o'clock, it is Headwaters with DJ Dang, and 11 o'clock, it will be World Cafe. 1 o'clock this afternoon, Dave Peterson is your volunteer host for On the River. He'll bring you a great mix of music.
Mixed Precipitation Opera Group has been touring throughout Minnesota. They're going to be at Mask and Rose Theater in Popovsky this Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Joining us now, Scotty Reynolds. He's producing artistic director at Mixed Precipitation Theater Group, and Kate Beliveau is back with us from the Mask and Rose Theater. Thank you for being here, Scotty and Kate.
Yeah, good morning, Jennifer.
Morning.
Good morning, Kate.
Good morning.
So first of all, Scotty, can you tell us about Mixed Precipitation?
Well, we're a theater company based in the Twin Cities that has a 17-year tradition traveling around Minnesota with our outdoor, what we call our outdoor opera extravaganzas. This is our 17th summer, and we're adapting a Mozart opera that's a very lively Greek epic tale that is probably a sliver of a chapter of the Iliad that's Mozart expanded into about a four-hour opera that includes a monster, sea monster attack, and some very high stakes dealings with the gods and potential human sacrifice. Our adaptation is very lively and fun and probably about 85 minutes long, giving you the highlights of the Mozart opera and with some what we call 1950s doo-wop and 1960s girl group woven into the story. And because we perform outdoors, I call our style site responsive. So we have a very kind of playful, epic outdoor style where the visual storytelling kind of takes over the whole landscape in a very, very lively, colorful way. And yeah, we'll be really excited to perform for the first time up in the northwest corner of the state at a great outdoor venue like the one that Kate and Al have carved into the wilderness off of Highway 89.
Kate, this seems perfect for Mask and Rose to do something like this.
It is. We seem to be dwelling in the land of Greek mythology because we just got done with Hades Town. So, of course, the love story between Hades and Persephone and Eurydice and Orpheus. And now we're literally 2.5-3 weeks moving into another Greek mythology. I think what I so appreciate, the work that Scotty does, is so over-the-top creative. And we love when people make things accessible. Sometimes people hear the word opera in rural spaces and they get very intimidated. It's like, well, that's just for the elite. Mm-hmm. And it's so not true, right? Stories are beautiful stories. And I think what Scotty and the troupe bring is this high level of creativity. And then there's just such a cool thing with being place-based, which is they've taken this to so many parks and nature centers. And my husband and I got to see it down in Minneapolis, and then another fellow art colleague said, why don't you think about bringing it up to your place? And so then the conversation started with Scotty. So we're just thrilled, and look at the weather. That's kind of an amazing thing that in September we're going to have 70 degrees, gorgeous weather, bring a chair, bring a blanket, bring a picnic. And it's a sliding scale, so again, accessibility for people. We're really excited to host these folks.
So, Scotty, how many people are you bringing to Popovsky?
It'll be about 14 folks, many of whom are like multi-instrumentalists. We really kind of weave the music into the way the story's told and delivered, and everybody's kind of a part of the engine of making the music together. And the folks come from a broad range of performance backgrounds. There's, you know, puppeteers, dancers, physical theater performers, and classical musicians. Yeah, it's really glorious, like outside, to experience, you know, just that kind of Olympian kind of classical music voice. And I've, as a theater artist myself, who's been collaborating with, you know, opera singers for many years now, but just sort of feeling the kind of like Olympian effort of like making that sound, and then also like expressing like deep human emotions, rage, love, desire, sort of like through kind of like what can come through your sinuses, through your throat, through your, you know, through your being, resonate inside your being. And the way that that kind of travels through distance outdoors is really fun to see, and has become a really great storytelling tool.
And maybe this is a question for both of you, because Kate, you have seen this, so you've been outside and seen this, but how, what do you see in audiences is it, that might be different than if we were sitting inside a theater?
We saw a different show when we were in Minneapolis, because Scotty and his company have done many, over 17 years, they have done many operas and adapted them to make them, to me, over the top creative. And yet, like you said, you hear these beautiful trained operatic voices, but bringing a lot of whimsy and fun to the opera. When we went, we took our grandbaby with us. And so you saw a little people, little children, all the way up to people that I consider Al and I elders. And so there's this broad range of people just enjoying being in community. And that's what theater's all about. And I always call it the queen of the arts, because you're bringing together music and dance and the written word. And I mean, think of it, Mozart out in a field in Popaski. Do you think he thought that would ever happen? So there's such a level of creativity that all ages can enjoy it. And I think there's not a person that wouldn't enjoy being in community and watching the show.
Yeah. So Scotty, you have been touring this all summer. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, it's we've gone as far north as Hovland and Grand Marais and Finland on the North Shore. We were down in Winona and Spring Valley in Fillmore County in the southeast corner of the state, and all over the metro this year. And it's really fun to kind of bring audiences outside, because the experience, I think, like inspires a lot of curiosity from audiences. And there's a way that sort of, I think, you know, when everything's going great, the audience is, you know, feels like they're on an adventure together, and experiencing the story alongside like the elements that nature introduces, wind, you know, wind, rain, falling leaves, you know, branches falling in the forest, birds, bugs, dragonflies, you know, all of those things sort of seem to be, you know, kind of in the scene with the singers, and those are all things that we recognize. I mean, we all like sort of, you know, leave our house and kind of face the wind, and we can, it adds to the epic undertaking that everybody is facing. And Minnesota audiences tend to be really prepared for whatever they may encounter at an outdoor performance. So we've really built the show to be really durable in all kinds of spaces and all kinds of weather.
So it sounds, having said that, okay, this is low mosquito time, however.
Oh. Yes.
If we had done it in June, we couldn't promise that.
Right.
But obviously this is the tail end of our summer. There are late summer days that makes it wonderful. We had another show called Nature, about Thoreau and Emerson that came up several years ago. And mosquitoes were a thing back then, because it was early in the season. So at least we can not worry about the mosquitoes.
So Scotty, it sounds like your performers are ready for anything that might hit them, you know, outside.
Yeah, and this is the end of our season. We'll have one more performance on Sunday, the 14th, down in the cities. But at this point, everyone's very tempered, very, very, very barnacled to the elements of outdoor performance.
Kate, tell us the logistics again for the performance.
Well, we are easy to find. We are right up on Highway 89. There's a huge yellow submarine sculpture, so it's hard to miss. So about 14 and three quarter miles north on Highway 89, and you can go to our Facebook page and get directions, and there's an event page there. And then folks come in, and like I said, really smart to bring a lawn chair or a blanket, bring a picnic lunch if you like to, so you can have supper after the show. And parking is real easy. We have a big field in front of the theater, and then there'll be signs to show, and there'll be a tent that Scotty and his organization sets up to welcome everyone. And then you just head up to find a place. There's plenty of room. We are 160 acres of land here. We're using a 40 acre plot for the show, so there's not a lack of space. And 13th at 3 o'clock p.m. and the weather is going to be absolutely beautiful. You do not want to miss it. Turn off the TV, put the rake aside, although the leaves haven't even begun to fall, have they? Just put those other to-do list things aside, because again, my passion is when community sits together and laughs and feels community. And so that is exactly what people will feel if they come to this show.
That is Kate Bellevaux from the Mask and Rose Theater in Poposki and Scotty Reynolds with Mixed Precipitation. The show, again, 3 o'clock at this Saturday, just about 14 miles north on Highway 89 in Poposki.
Scotty, Kate, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for supporting the arts. We appreciate you, folks.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Too long. A great weight is lifted. A great weight is gone. Great tongues have spoken. Hard lessons learned. The spell is broken. The tables have turned. Nobody falling through the cracks. Nobody breathing all down my back. No fiery furnace. Around the nine circles of hell, great weight is lifted, great weight is
Great Weight, new song coming out from The Swell Season. That's Glenn Hansard and Markita Irglova. It's the kind of music you hear on KAXE. We've got music coming up for you on Headwaters with our host, DJ Dang.
Support comes from Lake Country Power, a Touchstone Energy cooperative serving more than 44,000 members in northern Minnesota. Lake Country Power, energy that powers our lives.
We'd also like to thank The Sewing Room. They host Cultivating Community Summit September 22nd and 23rd in Brainerd. It's a two-day event featuring keynotes, interactive workshops, live music, and a special film screening. Full details can be found at sewingroom.org. Going on today at 7 p.m., Mesaba Concert Association kicks off their season at Hibbing High School Auditorium. It'll be Young Original, a fusion of jazz, classical, folk, and pop.
You are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley, Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, we're people-powered radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org.
Classic movie series tonight at the Edge Center for the Arts in Big Fork with Jaws, 6:30. It's free and open to everyone.
Fog should be lifting here pretty soon. Partly sunny today, high 72 to 75, and southeast winds 5 to 15. Cloudy tonight with lows 50 to 60, and slight chance of showers tomorrow morning. Partly sunny, temperatures in the mid to upper 70s.
We love hearing from you. Mary, the bus driver, is texting in this morning telling us the fog is making it hard to avoid hitting deer, making it a little more interesting is what she says. Thanks, Mary, for keeping the precious cargo safe. We appreciate it.